Isn't it a great night to be sober?
It is.
And it's always great to walk into a meeting room of Alcoholics Anonymous. People are smiling, they're chatting. And if you had told me 12 and a half years ago that I would be speaking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have called you names. But anyway. My name is Brenda, and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Brenda.
My sobriety date is October the 21st, 2011. My home group is Friends of Bill W. in Suffolk. We meet on Thursdays at 7 o'clock. We also have a noon meeting. It's a book study. We just finished up the big book, and we're now in the 12 and 12, and I love a good book study meeting. All right. I'm supposed to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I was raised in a very chaotic home in Farmville, Virginia. And by that, was raised by a stepfather who was a dry drunk. If you don't know what that is, it's somebody who's not drinking but without a program. Mm-hmm. Mean as a snake. My mother suffered from mental illness. And of course, I thought all that was normal. You know, when you're a kid, what do you know? You don't know what you don't know. And I had two half-brothers. Again, chaotic. I was a good student in school because it meant I was away from home. Those hours that I didn't have to spend there were precious. A good student, very active, you know, class president, blah, 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 all those wonderful things. And I share that with you. None of those things made me an alcoholic. None of those things. But anyway, I was OCD. Even now, all the white shirts are lined up, all, you know, I'm awful, better than I used to be. But I think I got that because I had such little control over what was happening at home. And I could control those things, you know, that the shoes were in proper order, et cetera, et cetera. When I was 18, I immediately moved out of my house once I graduated from high school. Immediately moved from my home and married husband number one. And we all know when somebody starts numbering their spouses, you're in for a ride. Anyway, married husband number one. That one didn't last very long. Mentally, I was still a child. But anyway, constantly looking for something to fill that empty spot inside me. You know, I tried to fill it with jobs. I was a workaholic. And filling that empty so that people would say, hey, you're doing a good job. Pat you on the head. Pat you on the shoulder. Kudos to Brenda. She's here before everybody else and doesn't leave till everybody else has. So I was constantly looking for reassurance that I was enough. Divorced husband number one, and continued to be a workaholic, continued to run up the credit card bills, because, you know, a girl's got to have plenty of clothes. And married husband number two when I was 21. And had my beautiful, beautiful son when I was 27. That young man has given me the most beautiful grandchildren. Anyway, that's the good stuff that's been going on. But again, during my marriage, selfish and self-centered doesn't even begin to touch what I was. It was all about me. I would make unilateral decisions without, you know, when you're married, you're supposed to be a team, right? You're supposed to talk things over, decide if it's the best thing. Well, I didn't need to do that because if I wanted to do it, of course he would. So I was, I mean, that's who I was. It took this program to make me finally realize just how bad I was, selfish. I can still go there. Don't think that, you know, miracles happen overnight. But anyway, during that time, and you'll notice I haven't said a word about teenage drinking. I was so busy trying to be perfect that drinking was not on my agenda. So I think I had my first beer when I was 21. And, you know, I didn't like it, but the people around me were drinking, and I wanted to be a part of the group. It was important to me to be accepted, to be a part of. And it was that feeling again of that emptiness in here. I'm a part of something. You know, people like me because I'm drinking the way they do. And so that was that. I also, during that time, we won't go into specifics because this is generally what things were like. I had affairs because, you know, it certainly better things out there, right? Because I was selfish and self-centered and wasn't getting the attention that I thought I deserved. So that marriage ended, and I was working at what was then Longwood College, is now Longwood University, and was doing really well, had a great job. Again, workaholic. I needed that approval. I needed to feel like I was better at, you know, doing everything. If you needed it done, see Brenda. She'll do it. And that was great because they loved me. They loved me, and I needed that. And again, all these things, the way I was, didn't make me an alcoholic. Did not make me an alcoholic. In 1985, I found husband number three, and that's how I ended up down here. He was from down here. And it was once I met him, he was a binge drinker. And once I met him, you know, the regular drinking set in. I was still a social drinker. But you know, in the big book, it tells us that those of us, you know, we start off, it's fun. I love the way it made me feel, you know, because I was a very uptight person trying to be perfect. And alcohol just made me feel so good, you know, it was fun. And that's how it always starts out. And I could have quit had I wanted to. But why would I want to? It was fun. I was having a good time and no problems, you know, no driving and drinking, none of that. So then we lived next door to this couple who built this fabulous garage, party garage. And every Friday night, we would go over there. And of course, my drink of choice was wine because of the pretty glasses. And you know, it was so sophisticated to drink wine. And of course, that didn't last long, did it? But anyway, but we would go over there every Friday night and dance and drink. And it was super fun. And there were other things being done, but I never messed with anything other than alcohol. I think I was afraid. But anyway, I'm glad I was. So suddenly that period of time of drinking on Friday night sort of blended in to Saturday. I was still working and still, you know, doing the thing of working all the time. In 1995, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and managed to work until 2002, at which time it was recommended that I pursued disability, and I did, and got it. And I share that with you because the one thing that was helping fill that empty place in here was now gone. I was a nobody. I had depended on work and the people around me to help me get through. And suddenly I didn't have it anymore. I did not have it anymore. I did okay for the first couple of years after I had to stop working. And during that time, I was out in the yard. I love flowers and working in the yard. And for the first couple of years, it was great. I'm still drinking on Friday and Saturday now. And I even got to the point, I was taking care of the yard all the time. A cold beer after mowing that grass. Now that wasn't my thing, but all of a sudden it sounded like a really fun thing to do. So anyway, the partying continued. And I learned how to play poker. And, you know, talk about addictions. Gambling is another addiction I've got. I don't do it anymore. But I learned, we had another set of neighbors who always went to Atlantic City. So we went with them a few times. Super fun, super fun. And you know what's even more super fun? Is they serve you drinks the whole day long. I don't care what time of day it is, morning, noon, night. They're serving you free drinks. And oh boy, was that fun. And so I get home and and at that time, you could play online poker for money. And I discovered that. And I started playing online poker. Now, my husband at the time was at work all day long. Well, you know where I was. Sitting at my computer, playing poker. And I would drink my, you know, when you're in Atlantic City, you drink all the time. Well, my keen alcoholic thinking, I'm gonna drink. And, you know, it's, you know, all those stories we tell ourselves, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And so I would have my glass of wine playing along. Well, that glass of wine didn't last very long. I know, I'll just bring the whole bottle in. And, you know, I didn't drink them little tiny things. The big, I've forgotten what you call them now, it's been so long, but the big things of wine, I'd go through a whole bottle and then blackout. I was a blackout drinker. And I will have to tell you a story that goes with that. I was in blackout and somehow cracked my ribs. I don't know where I fell, I don't know how it happened, but the story I came up with, because we all can do that, talk about a lie. I was outside on the patio where the Adirondack chairs were, and my neighbor's dog ran over and jumped on me, pushed me over into the chair, and that's how I cracked my ribs. And everybody bought it, or at least I think they did. But that you know, that talk about imaginary things happening. But anyway, so the playing poker, drinking all day, and we know it's a progressive disease. And at this point, I still wasn't thinking about quitting. I was thinking about controlling it, you know. And what ended up happening to me in that last year of drinking, the minute my feet hit the floor and I would come to from drinking the day before, and I would drink. And every day that I did that and passed out, I would wake up and say, I'm not going to do this again. I am not gonna do this again. And within an hour, again came along, and it got to the point where I was drinking all day, every single day, to blackout. Coming to, drinking again, and one of the things I did, now I share this, I'm not proud of any of this stuff. None of us are. But we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. At the time I had a 4-year-old grandson who played soccer. And he was staying with me and after kindergarten. And it was my job to drive him to soccer practice. And I wasn't completely out of my mind, but you know how, at least I could convince myself that I wasn't that bad. And I put that little thing in the back seat of my car and drove him like this. Through the grace of God, we got there safely. But when I think of the stupid things I used to do, I always tell people, I never had a car accident unless you count the parked cars I hit. So I was one of those, I did not lose my, see, I was on disability, so I was earning a paycheck. I did not lose my home, I didn't lose my vehicle, I didn't even lose my husband. I lost my soul. I lost Brenda. I lost Brenda. So one October the 20th, 2011, I had been drinking, and of course I would drink anything if I ran out of wine. I even drank moonshine. Ugh. Like drinking gasoline. But anyway, when you're an alcoholic, anything will do. But I had promised myself I was not going to drink. Not going to drink. And of course, I'm an alcoholic. That's all I know to do is drink. I decided then and there, I am no good to my son, who has since said, Mama, we can't let you keep Will anymore until you get better. My husband didn't even talk to me. Who can talk to somebody who's passed out? But anyway, I just felt totally, what is that, incomprehensible? There you go. That was me. I had reached that, you know, I reached an emotional bottom. Totally hopeless and ready to just toss in the towel. I was done. But my thought was, I'm just going to leave this world. And I had the pills to do it. And again, I think this was a God thing, because that little, is this really what you want to do? Is this really what you want to do? So I called my brother, who lives 3 hours away, and told him, you know, I was half drunk and I'm crying, sobbing, and I told him what was going on. And he said, you need to call the suicide hotline. And in complete seriousness, I don't know the number. You know? So then he says, call 911. And I did. And I'm expecting an ambulance to show up. I'd never thought about taking myself out before. Mm-hmm. Well, two of Suffolk's finest showed up. And I will have to tell you this, as looped as I was, those two officers treated me with the greatest respect that I didn't deserve it. I did not deserve it. I was still in my pajamas, which is what this alcoholic did. I never changed clothes. Never brushed my hair, never brushed. I was a total mess. And my last name is Clayton. Ms. Clayton, would you like to change clothes? They didn't have to ask me that. And so I went and changed clothes. They put me in the back, first time I've ever ridden in one, the back of the police car with the screen. And while they're transporting me, you know, they have those little screens like we've all got now, the camera thing. And I'm looking, and it says suicide attempt. I wonder who that is. So, and it's, you know, my brain was mush. They took me to Tidewater, Western Tidewater, and I did not realize that I was then a ward of the state. You know, now this is a proud woman who was a workaholic, who always thought she had to have new clothes and new shoes and look spiffy and always have her hair just so and her makeup just right. And suddenly, what have I come to? I'm a ward of the state because I'm a drunk. They transferred me from, I had to first of all promise I wasn't going to run away and that I would comply with whatever they asked. So, you know, and I was like, yes, I'll do it. So they took me eventually, I ended up in Maryview in detox. And part of the triage that they did was to ask me, have you ever been physically, emotionally, or sexually abused? And it was all of the above. And again, that's not what made me an alcoholic. That's not what made me an alcoholic. So I ended up in detox. They took me to my first AA meeting, and I didn't know why I was going. I was trying to commit suicide. Why am I going to an AA meeting? And so I get there, and it was like four of us. There were three other folks and myself that were there for alcoholism. And so we had to introduce ourselves. And the first guy said, I'm so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. And then she says, and it gets to me. It was like a ton of bricks was lifted off my chest. And I said, I'm Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic. And I started crying. And it was like, I finally know what's going on. I finally understand why I can't just stop drinking. And you know, in our big book, the first step is, you know, we admitted we were alcoholic and our lives had become unmanageable. Well, at the book study last night, someone shared this and I thought it was so perfect. The manager of my life was alcohol. Alcohol told me when to wake up, when to go to sleep, you know, on and on and on. It ruled my life. I had to make sure I had enough. Always had to have enough. So, yeah, my life was unmanageable, for sure, for sure. I did not realize until I got in here that I was powerless over everything, but in this case, alcohol. I did not realize that. While I was there, I begged them to keep me. I did not want to leave the safety of those walls, because when you leave places like that, you are out there in the real world, and you have to face everybody. And of course, there's alcohol out there. So what I ended up doing was I was at home all day by myself. I couldn't face that. So I went to Farmville and stayed with my brothers. And they helped me for 2 weeks. Got me to meetings every day, and so that got me over the hump. When I got home, the first thing I did was find a meeting. And I tried to do 90 and 90 because that was what was suggested, I almost did it, but for me, it was, I had to. I was afraid not to. I needed to be among you guys, to be reminded every single day that I'm an alcoholic. And one day at a time, not to pick up. And so far it's worked, you know. But anyway, so that was who I was, what I was like. And then once, and I've told you what happened, and then what it's like now. I think I'm a better person. When I first came in, you know, service work is important because keep busy, keep busy, keep busy. And so volunteered to make coffee, helping greet people, helping set up the room, helping clean up the room. And I still do that to this day. Slowly but surely, the important thing, greet everybody. Don't let anybody walk through that door that you don't say, "Hi, I'm Brenda. Glad you're here." And that works. That's really cool stuff. It's not hard. It's not hard at all. If you, you know, when I will tell you this, when I first walked into these rooms, I was so ashamed and felt so guilty that my eyes never left the floor. I was like this for a week and a half until finally I started learning names. People who put out their hand to me or hugged me. And, you know, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. But as time went on, I found a home group. Found a home group. Because if you don't have a home group, you're homeless. So, and I found a sponsor. Now, I have a sponsor now. I don't have the same one. But my sponsor now said, "Brenda, we're going to start just like you're brand new." And what my sponsor did with me and does with me, we read every single page of the big book, starting with the preface or the preface, all the forewords from the beginning, doctor's opinion, all the way through. And those words that don't make any sense now because it was written so long ago, she took the time to explain them to me. To, you know, if you don't know, look it up. So my fourth edition is going to stay with me until the day I'm put under or in an urn. But so it's important to find a good sponsor who is willing to sit down with you and explain everything from A to Z. A sponsor that I'm not afraid to say, "I don't understand." And she's willing to take the time to help me through it. A sponsor I can say, "This is what's going on with me." And I love this woman so much. She can very objectively look at a situation and point out the obvious, which, you know, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, apparently, because I'm like, why didn't I think of that? But I love that I can go to her with anything, anything. I got more involved in a home group. I became GSR, all while helping set up the meeting and, you know, chairing a meeting. We take turns chairing the meeting, handing out the readings, and doing it. GSR, I wasn't sure what it was all about. It took me a year to figure it out. Second year was great. While I was in there, I chaired, was helped with the workshop committee, the Grapevine committee. Again, I didn't know what I was doing, but that's why God made questions. You ask people who do know what to do. So, and being afraid to ask for help, I always was because I'm very self-sufficient. I'm an intelligent woman. I should be able to figure it out. Asking for help. It, you know, you cut to the chase right away. But anyway, but I enjoyed that. Got very involved in the district. And if you haven't tried that, it's a side of AA. you know, that everybody should know a little bit about. Maybe you're not into that. You're still sober, right? But anyway, my family, I am welcome to family gatherings. I have saved a lot of money not buying all that wine. And when I make a commitment, I keep it. I used to, being the selfish, self-centered alcoholic that I am, I would commit to something and then come up with the most stupid excuse not to do it. And, you know, then, I'm sorry, the such and such has come up. You know, oh, I was pitiful. But, you know, in we learn through working these steps and through being around one another that commitment is a serious thing. And once you say you're going to do something, you do it. You know, and I've been told you never say no. On occasion, I have said no. But also the big book tells me God gave us brains to use. So, you know, all the answers are right in here for every single thing. You know, that even how to sponsor people. You know, when I first started sponsoring, I was scared because I wanted to help that person stay sober the way I had been helped. And but it's a matter of opening up the book and doing what my sponsor did with me and being willing to spend the time. You know, what is it? You can't keep it if you don't give it away. And, you know, that used to make no sense to me. But, you know, the longer I'm in here, the more I understand a lot of things that didn't used to make sense to me. You know, first things first. What does that mean? Exactly what it says. The obvious. First things first. And acceptance. There are a lot of things that are going on in our lives on a daily basis. And, you know, I am a good one. One of my character defects that I work so hard to tamp down, I'll never get rid of it, but I don't use it as often as I used to. Judging another alcoholic. You know, you see, oh, I'm awful. But Buster tells me, he says, Brenda, you don't have to make amends for what you're thinking. But I try not to think negative things. I have found that if I dwell in a negative world for very long, suddenly nothing is right. Suddenly nothing is right. Staying away from toxic people, toxic situations, and I don't mean I ignore people. I just don't join in their little negative worlds. You know, I try to be nice to everyone. What is it? We don't like everyone necessarily, but because we're all in this together, we love everyone. I haven't touched on made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand Him. My question when I first started working the steps, what does God have to do with this? I want to stop drinking. I don't want to drink anymore. What has that got to do with it? And my sponsor told me, it's not up for debate. This is the program. We're a spiritual program. And, you know, no arguments. This is what we do. And, of course, the purpose of the book is to help us all find something, a higher power. And so I did as suggested. And every morning, read, whether it's the Daily Reflection or some other AA literature, read something out of the big book. And I also read Emmett Fox, who was a contemporary of Bill many, many, many years ago. And then, Brenda, I want you to pray. Don't care what you pray, just pray. And for a while, I would do the Serenity Prayer because I knew it. I would do the Lord's Prayer because I was raised in a Southern Baptist church. And so I was familiar with the Lord's Prayer. When I was growing up, the God of my church was, hellfire and brimstone. And there was a big book he was keeping up there with all my sins in it. And just a punishing God. So once I got in here, I was willing to do what was asked of me because it was working for everybody else. I was desperate. I would do whatever it takes. And I started including the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt, on and on. By the time I had 9 months of sobriety, I'm sitting in my living room going through my prayers and readings. All of a sudden, that empty place that was here wasn't empty anymore. It wasn't a white light experience, but I swear. I got chills because I felt that empty place that I'd been trying to fill for so long with materialistic things, with men, with jobs. It was filled just through prayer and trying to establish that conscious contact with the God of my understanding. Now, for this alcoholic, this sinful woman, that was a miracle. I mean, good Lord, thank you, you know? And from then on, my faith and reliance on the God of my understanding has carried me through a lot of rough spots, that divorce from husband number three. I had some major surgery not too long ago, and it was scary, but my faith got me through. Yeah, it was bad, but I knew it was going to be okay. I just knew it. And for me, that's what my faith has done for me. I even, to this day, okay, I'm getting up there in age, and if I drop something on the floor, and I can't find it, irritates me to no end, but I'll stand there and relax and look, and there it is. And you know what I say? Thank you, God. Little teeny things, little teeny things I'm thankful for. Don't be laughing at this old woman. But, when the light turns green, any little thing that makes my day better, it makes my day better. So that's the kind of relationship that Alcoholics Anonymous taught me about. I didn't have that kind of relationship with that Southern Baptist God. I never knew that I could. Never knew I could. But, I'm convinced to this day that God put me in these rooms because he knew I needed help. And he knew I was ready to give up. And the neat part about everything is the AA brought me to God, the God of my understanding. How long have I been up here? I don't know what time it is.
As much time as you want.
Okay. I don't want to waste y'all's time, but anyway, Alcoholics Anonymous is the most precious, precious gift that I have ever received, ever. And it has gotten me to where I am today. Life is still rough. Problems still happen. Yes, I get angry sometimes, but you know what? My anger is not what it used to be. I can get through it without you know, throwing things without drinking. And that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my highest expectations. You know, when I walk into a room, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm always greeted with a smile, with a hug, with a handshake. And there's two things that I am guaranteed are going to happen in the rooms of AA. We're going to say two prayers, Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. If whatever happens in between is up to God. But I know those two things are going to happen. And, you know, it's just, who here thought they'd be sitting at an AA meeting on a Friday night, you know, 12 years and 7 months ago, this I'd just be getting started on that other life. So it's a miracle that we're all sitting here. You know, there are so many who enter these rooms that don't make it. So we are the lucky ones. We are the blessed ones. And if my 5 minutes is up, I shall say, bid you adieu. Thank y'all so much.